Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Taverman. As always, I'm joined by my good pal out in the United States, JJ Duke. JJ, we're going to be in the same time zone for the next edition of the podcast. Do you know what? I cannot contain my excitement.
I know. I'm kind of a little disappointed, though, maybe, because I'm not going to be there. Obviously, everyone he's referencing to the fact that the NWSL Championship is going to be taking place in Orlando, and my life is hectic in the fall. I have to work, but my friend, I will be there in spirit, and our next recording will be sometime in my evening, not your evening, my late afternoon.
Yeah, be decent, mate, be decent. I'm looking forward to it. Fly out to Orlando in the next couple of days. Cannot wait for the championship game. We're going to cover off the semi-finals of the playoffs a little bit later on in the show, but we're going to start off with, I guess it's a bit of a continuation from some of the stuff we talked about in the last edition, isn't it? We had discussions about the situation with Denmark, but we also spoke about some of the issues that were going on with Brazil. Obviously, the head coach was fired in the last few weeks, and now the players have responded. Legend Cristiane has announced that she will no longer be available for selection. A number of other players have also followed suit. There's been a signed letter that I saw. I think Cici, legend of the Brazilian national team, has signed this letter stating how unhappy they are with the Brazilian Federation. This is another situation, mate, where it's getting a little bit messy.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, this is coming from, you know, traditionally on the men's side, one of the most powerful and legendary nations in football. No, it's one of those things that, you know, the women have, not to say that they've seen a lot of progression in their development of the sport grown in the past decade or so. It's gotten a little bit better. Obviously, last summer with the Rio Olympics, playing in front of sold-out stadiums, that definitely helped a lot of things. But, you know, now as it's really starting to become popular trend, and worthily so, it has to be, the women deserve equal pay as the men do, if not better. Because let's face it, some of the teams in the world on the women's side are far superior than the men's side. Hello, Canada. But yeah, at the moment, I think Brazil have a fair shout to do this. And it sounds like, you know, while we don't have the full details yet, it sounds like there are going to be some sort of talks taking place in the near future about trying to make some of these working conditions better for players, not only in the present, but for the future as well.
Yeah, it comes down to what a lot of the nations are fighting for at the moment, isn't it? This isn't about money per se. This is about equality. This is about being treated the same as the men. And I will say to those that on social media that come back with the responses of, well, how much money do they generate and how successful are they? Yawn. I'm not having any of that. The Brazil women's national team have been performing really well over the last 10-20 years. Yes, they are still waiting for that elusive national title, or international title, sorry. But in Marta, they have probably the most talented player that's ever played in the women's game. And if you have someone like that, for me, she has to be treated, and her teammates have to be treated, the same as the men. I don't care how much money the team is generating. If you saw the Rio Olympics in 2016... those stadiums were full, and we saw, I think there was an infamous image, wasn't there, JJ, of someone who had, I think possibly even Neymar, crossed out of their jersey and Marta written underneath it. This is a team who aren't given the opportunities to develop. They don't play enough international football. They don't have the opportunity to keep up with some of what I would describe now as the leading nations. I think Brazil, unfortunately, have fallen a little bit behind. But that's through no fault of their own. They are not being given the opportunities to push on and challenge the likes of the US and France. And let's put the Netherlands in there now, as they're the Euro champions. Brazil have fallen away a little bit, and it's through no fault of the players.
Agreed, and I think it really comes down to, you know, the resources that are not provided to them. You know, they talked about, I think, what the last major cycle, this quote-unquote residency and development camp that they had for an 18-month period leading up to Rio that ran through the Women's World Cup. But a lot of their top players, O'Kieran, as we know, they're not playing domestically. They're playing overseas, so you know, we don't know much, or at least personally, I've not seen a whole lot of the stories of what happened and what took place during those camps. But, you know, this is not about now. It's about you know, the next generation coming in. And we see this a lot now. You know, I, for me personally, know through the United States women's hockey team that, you know, they're talking about generations coming down the line, not just, you know, the young girls that are starting the game, but, you know, the next one after that and what resources are going to be available. And I think that's really what it comes down to. The men get these opportunities to grow at the youth levels and, you know, have not just, yeah, you're talking about the money, but just the opportunities to perform at a high level and train at a high level with good coaching. You know, it's not the same on the women's side. So, yeah, I'm fully behind this. Hopefully in this, you know, whatever these meetings or series of meetings that they have, they can get something done so we can start to see Brazil back in the elite and competing for, as you say, that first real major international title.
Yeah, without question. I mean, if you look at how they did in Rio, narrowly missed out on a medal. They've come very, very close in some competitions in the last decade to getting over the line, but it hasn't quite happened. And as I say, that is because they are not being given the opportunity to develop and to push on. They were one of the leading nations because of the lack of opportunities, in my view, that they're being given. Other teams have overtaken them and have pushed on ahead. So let's hope that those conversations that are due to take place, or certainly are being publicised that are going to take place, do happen, and that there is some resolution to this, and that Brazil are back, as you say, amongst the elite. One team and one federation that has responded to some issues with their players is the Norwegian FA. It was announced this week that they are going to be paying the female team exactly the same as the male team. And my understanding from the articles that I've read is that some of the male team, or the male team, are going to be sacrificing some of their own income to make sure that the females are paid on an equal level. Now, we were talking literally 2 minutes ago about how some nations' female teams are better than the males. Norway is one of them, mate. The Norway men's team is pretty terrible at the moment. And while we saw the women's team underperform at Euro 2017, we saw them reach the final in 2013. Historically, Norway have been very strong in the women's game. This is good news, isn't it? And I think recognition of a team that can now hopefully push on, raise the memories of 2017 and really push on for 2019 World Cup.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned about the men's team, and a few of the players are very vocal in talking about the fact that it was the men's team that were really standing in and saying, well, absolutely, in the Norwegian Federation, everybody should be getting the same pay no matter what, you know, the situation is. And, you know, fair play to them as well. Not to say that it was all they're doing, but, you know, that seeing unity amongst all sides, that makes decisions a lot easier to be made. So I think, you know, they definitely get a stick tap for that. But at the same time, this is something that's positive. As you said, you know, the performance in the last major tournament, a little bit of a skid mark in what has been a very, very strong tradition for Norwegian women's football. Now, hopefully, as you know, we're seeing the improvement of the, you know, with the development of the federation, as well as the monetary additions to what's going to come for the budget of the Norwegian women's national program. You know, these are good things. Now, there are still some things to sort out, and one of those being the Ada Hegerberg situation. When are things going to be resolved? Will this be something that will entice her to come back more quickly than it was in the past? We don't know. But again, progress is progress, and these are good things happening.
Yeah, without question. Ada Hegerberg, obviously, well, without question, the star player in that team, and obviously made it known a little while ago that she was unavailable for selection. She was, in inverted commas, taking a break. But I would like to think, or I would hope, that with this agreement that she might consider coming back. Obviously, she stated very openly that this was more than just about pay. This was about opportunities. This was about a lot more than just equal pay with the men. So I would imagine that there's probably still some things that she will be looking for reassurances over. But fingers crossed she gets those reassurances and she's back where she belongs in the national team. Because they've got talent, mate. I mean, we'll talk about it in a minute. But I've watched Chelsea ladies a couple of times in the last week. And Maren Mjelde, oh my God, what a player. What a player. Unbelievable. So they have the talent there without question. But good news for Norway. Hopefully they can push on. And let's hope that Brazil, as we were saying earlier, can come to a similar sort of resolution. Now, mentioned Ada Hegerberg. UEFA Women's Champions League took place in the last week. We had the first legs take place. And as I said, I went and saw Chelsea ladies come up against FC Bayern Munich. It was, for me, the tie of the round. And Chelsea, who have been knocked out by German opposition in the last 2 years by VfL Wolfsburg, they were able to overcome Bayern Munich in that first leg 1-0. It was a goal by Drew Spence. Mate, a lead to Munich is a lead, and that gives them a very good position and a good opportunity to try and progress.
Yeah, it does. You know, it's interesting when you look at it on paper, and I know you were there in person, so you can probably enlighten us a little bit more. Statistically, this was a match superior for Bayern. More of the offensive side got a lot of shots on target, and obviously, you know, it did help on the day that Chelsea, they were stout and organized enough defensively. Hedvig Lindahl had a very good match. I think she came up with two very good saves in the latter portion of that match. Might have been more than that, but definitely held the fort there. But yeah, this proves a little bit concerning, Kieran, about how the team is going to go about into the second stage. They looked brilliant this past weekend as well in their league match. But yeah, you say it's a lead. I'm not so convinced right now.
Oh, really? Because I mean, look, statistics do show that Bayern had a lot of the ball. And I tell you what, I know she retired from the national team recently. Melanie Behringer pulled the strings in that Bayern Munich midfield. She was class. But what I will say is they had a lot of ball. Yes, they had some chances. But I think Chelsea were worthy winners on the day, mate. I will say that. Yes, it was close. Yes, it's only a 1-0 lead, but Chelsea came out of the blocks absolutely flying, and they were the better team in the first half. And I'm going to play some audio in a minute from Emma Hayes, and I'm going to play a little bit from Crystal Dunn that I picked up from the game against Liverpool, which we'll talk about in a second. Emma Hayes described the game as a coaching masterclass. Now, that might sound a little bit arrogant, but she was absolutely right. She played Maria Thorisdottir, the Norwegian international defender, at left wing back. Now, when she played her there at left wing back, obviously better known for being a centre back when she plays for the Norwegian international team, when I saw her there, I was like, that is a little bit odd. But then when I saw the first half, especially that Maria had, when she was trying to nullify the threat of Leonie Meyer and Fridolina Rolfo on that right hand side, and occasionally Simone Laudere pushed out to that right side as well. Mate, with her on the left wing back and Magdalena Eriksson at left centre back, those two were excellent. Like, really, really good, and completely nullified that right side to the point where Bayern really did try and push down the left hand side in the second half. And I think it was a coaching masterclass by Emma Hayes. And if she can produce that in the second leg, I do think that Chelsea could go through. Yes, Bayern will have a lot of ball. Yes, Bayern will have a lot of chances. But if she can figure out a way to nullify the threats, I do think that they'll go through.
Well, I think that that's it. And I didn't mean that before as like saying insulting in the fact that...
Of course not. No, no,
Chelsea.
No.
But my thing is, when you're saying chances and ball with Bayern, that's where it scares me a little bit if you're a Chelsea fan right now, because of the fact that now you have to travel on the road and compete against them. But what I will say is, yeah, you're talking about a masterclass, and you look at, again, that bench that Chelsea had available to them. I'm curious to see what sort of changes that she makes in the second, because you look down the reserves that didn't play in that match. You have Kaz Kearney, who didn't play, Ji So-yeon, who didn't play. You'd have to think maybe you swap her in at, you know, up top to be that sort of pest, you know, running on the back line, trying to make things happen, try to create a little bit of chaos. Crystal Dunn played, what, I think a quarter of an hour in that match, and you have Aaron Cuthbert in there as well. And there's a few others that didn't even see the bench in that. So I'm curious now, with you're saying those tactics, if you keep those two on the left side there, you're talking about Thorisdottir and Eriksson, do you make the changes maybe to strengthen also that right side of the field with the players higher up the field to challenge Bayern? And I think, you know, combining that with Lindahl needing to pull another miraculous performance out, yeah, that's where I can see Chelsea getting a result away. If they can get that first goal, though, mate, I think that's going to do them a lot of confidence, especially in the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes in the second.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what lineup Emma Hayes does go with. Incredible depth in that squad now, and we managed to speak to her after the game to talk about the team that she selected, and obviously the result as a, and obviously the result as a whole. And I actually managed to speak to Crystal Dunn about making her Champions League debut as well when I was at their game against Liverpool. So I'll play both of the clips back to back. So Emma Hayes on the win over Bayern, and Crystal Dunn on making her Women's Champions League debut.
It did look like they had carried out your instructions to the letter, just watching that.
Well, if they didn't, my vocal cords have certainly been left deep, chilling internally inside every one of my players. But they have learned from the pre-season game. You know, we've evaluated, we've worked hard on the training pitch for that performance. Everybody knew their role, and I thought all 14 players did exactly what we asked them to do tonight.
How much on that evidence have you grown as a team from 12 months ago?
Well, we got a clean sheet for starters against the German side. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know of any English team that's beaten the German team on home soil. Might be wrong, club competition, but I don't think I am. So for that, we have to be, you know, excited about. But it's half time. The game's not over, it's just half time. And I think we have to say we've put in a good first half performance.
I was going to say, it's the same again, isn't it, in Munich?
Well, I think they're upset, so we have to expect they're at home. We're going into an atmosphere we haven't played in before, but I think we're hardened, we're more resilient, we're more ready. I think the new signings have bedded in well. We're showing our versatility. Players are able to adapt and play in different positions, but ultimately they're adhering to instructions in quite a good defensive structure. And I thought it was what we call a perfect coach's performance tonight.
I think you're allowed to say that. Just finally from me, you've got a game in between, obviously, the next tie. How do you manage that?
Well, I've got 23 fantastic players, and that's the reason we have 23 fantastic players. Of course, you know, we have to assess what's going to be best for that type of game, but I trust every member of my squad.
How difficult was it picking the team today, Emma? I don't think we'll see many stronger benches in the competition this year.
Well, I think for me it's not difficult because I just have to do the job of winning the game, and the players are fully behind the decisions I take. I never expect a sub to be happy, but I know how good our dressing room is and everybody bought into the game plan. And when you get results like that, then of course when you win games, players win them. When you lose them, coaches lose them.
I was interested to see Maria out on the, as a left wing back. Was that to try and nullify the threat of Meyer and Rolfo?
Or do you think she did?
I think she did very well.
Then, as I say, everybody looked at that and thought, what the hell is she doing? And I thought, I have no qualms whatsoever, because you can see that Maria is a top young player and will adapt quite quickly to what was expected. And I think we have to learn from this competition. We're not going to have the ball a lot. They're a top team, but if we're tough to break down, then we have half a chance.
Was that your best display in Europe? Certainly an excellent result. You feel like it's your best display?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can see we're going to new levels. That doesn't come quickly. I've been part of that Arsenal dressing room with Vic and knew how long it took for him to reach the heights in Europe. And, you know, he's always advised me that it will take time and you need the negative experiences and the losses to be able to, you know, progress. And I think that the last two Wolfsburg games have shown that, you know, we are learning, and we have certainly reaching the levels and surpassing that of the spring series.
And how much fitter and sharper do you feel? I know we've been here with German sides before when it's been your off season, and here we are now off the back of some good wins in the league. Everyone looked pretty sharp and fit.
Yeah, I think they did until about 75 minutes, because we've had two league games that is not at that level. And so my concern was, are we going to be match sharp for 90 minutes? So that we talked a lot about the bench being ready for that. But I think as a result of this type of game, we'll be even stronger come next Wednesday.
I was going to say, Emma, you're a big advocate. We spoke probably this time last year with the Wolfsburg game, with the change in calendar. Was the preparation a little bit more, maybe thorough this time around, maybe a bit more match sharpness, having a couple of games under your belt in the WSL?
Probably, but I think the big difference is that we had a really good pre-season tour and got our arses kicked by them 3-0. And players, sorry Steve, are reminded of that. And no one wants to be, you know, humiliated. And I think every player was conscious of that day and made sure that their effort was significantly better than it was that day.
The new players are fitting very well, not just tactically, but in terms of the spirit. I mean, Eriksen throwing herself at a shot towards the end, for example.
She's a blue. She is Chelsea. They just look like Chelsea players. They look like they've been here for years. I know that we've developed a team that's been wonderful going forward and very creative. But goals wins you game, defences win you championships.
You made your Champions League debut on Wednesday. I know that was a big pull for you coming to Chelsea. I know we're obviously a few days away after that, and obviously the second leg coming up. Mm-hmm. How did you find that 15 minutes that you had?
It was very intense. I think I had a role to play, and it was all about, you know, don't deny them any chances. And for me, you know, that came with a lot of mental fatigue, I feel like. You know, even though I played 15 minutes, I was like mentally like, whoa, that was incredible. So for me, it's just, you know, Champions League is a strategic kind of tournament. You know, I would say you don't want to concede, you don't want to give any chances to any team. And I think for me, it was a good performance, I think, on my side.
Second leg coming up. Chelsea have been knocked out by German opposition the last 2 years. This is the first time they've been in a position where they're ahead in a tie massive this week, isn't it?
Yes. I think since I've been a part of this club, it was all about, we got to just, you know, rip off these band-aids and honestly not let what happens every single year for this team come into play this year. I think it's about breaking down these barriers and being like, listen, we're a good side. We're a very competitive team, and whatever opposition we play, we're going after them.
So that was Emma Hayes and Crystal Dunn. JJ, having a look at some of the other results, I guess one of the teams that people are trying to keep an eye on a little bit this year, FC Barcelona, obviously made massive recruitment over the off-season. Both of the big names that joined, or two of the big names that joined, Tony Duggan and Lika Martins, both scored in a 4-0 win away at Norwegian club Avaldsnes. That is a good result for them, isn't it? Avaldsnes, on their day, can be a problematic team for opposition, but Barcelona disposing of them, and it looks like they're going to be comfortably through to the next round.
Yeah, I think it was cruise control, really, for them, especially when Lika Martins scored inside 20 minutes. Kind of a little bit meddled down in the middle portion of the match, but, I mean, when you're scoring three inside the final 20 minutes, Tony Duggan got her name onto the score sheet. Also good to see Andresa Alves getting a look there late on for Barcelona, and she got a goal as well. So, yeah, you know, 4-0 away, that's about as good as you can get. And you're talking about Avaldsnes, I think that's a real tough team for a lot of other opposition. They've got a lot of internationals on their roster, a lot of Australians as well, for that matter. But as you said, Barcelona, with all the recruitments that they've had, you know, this is a team that you can't pen them in to the semifinals, but I can definitely see them making a very, very deep run, depending on who their opposition is going over the next few stages.
Yeah, another club likely to make a deep run. Can't leave them out, being that this is a UK-based podcast. Man City, good 3-0 win away in Austria at St. Poulton. I think they will no doubt go through. They should be comfortable at home this week. I think that was a positive result. You know, St. Poulton, not a bad side. Could have been a potential banana skin, but City looked very strong. And we'll talk about City a little bit later on in the WSL, because there was a really nasty injury that happened to one of their players. Any results that stand out for you, mate? Obviously, Ajax won on their debut in the Champions League over Brescia. They played a lot of the game with 10 players. Atletico going down 3-0 at home to Wolfsburg. That potentially could have been maybe a little bit closer, with Atletico winning the championship last year. Anything stand up for you? Obviously, the holders, Lyon.
I think the one for me, mate, is the Montpellier-Zvezda match.
Yes.
You know, this is one of those that we were thinking, okay, so Montpellier, now they're making their case to, you know, crash the party of the traditional top two in France. Lots of additions, similar to what we saw in Barcelona coming into the side over the past, you know, 12 to 18 months or so. But they pretty much go and throw a dud at home. Now they have to go to Russia after conceding an own goal by Sembra in the second half. Mate, that's not an ideal situation. That's not an easy trip, as we know, to fly. You think that, okay, so Montpellier, you know, not ideal having to host the first leg. You know, you traditionally want to be the team hosting the second match in a two-leg series. But, you know, they have to be more clinical, and they have a very solid back line for that, that matter. We're talking, you know, the Dutch team briefly before, Anouk Dekker, who I thought was one of the top three center backs in the Euros. Yeah, you know, this is one of those things that I'm going to have to really keep an eye on over the second leg. And if there is a stream for that match, definitely have to watch, because that could be a bit of an upset if they go out in the first round.
Yeah, I think even though it's Montpellier's debut in the competition, the fact that they overcame PSG to qualify in the first place, that was probably the shock of the first leg for me. I don't look at any of the other results and kind of think that there were any major surprises. I mean, Fiorentina making their debut, overcoming Fortuna Chioring, you have to say that that's a very good result for an Italian team making their first appearance in the competition. I actually look at it and we see some big scorelines in the competition. Obviously, we expect the likes of Lyon to win quite heavily in the opening rounds. They obviously went to Poland, beat Medic Konin 5-0. Sparta Prague went to Pauk from Greece and won 5-0. I understand we've spoken about Barcelona winning 4-0 in Valdenes. What's quite nice, though, mate, there's still quite a lot of ties where there can still be some changes happening. I mean, Glasgow City went down 3-0 in Kazakhstan. That's disappointing for them. But Glasgow City at home against Kazakhstan, I'm pretty confident will be a very different game. And I think the last time that these two played in the competition, I think someone put a link up to an article. I think Glasgow lost the first leg 2-0 in Kazakhstan and then won the second leg 3-0. So as much as they look out of it at the moment, I wouldn't rule Glasgow out turning that one around. You've got Linköping are only 1-0 up over Apollon of Cyprus. You've got Zurich drew 1-1 away. You've got LSK and Bromby drew 0-0. Ajax Brescia was only 1-0. There's still plenty of ties where the opposition, who maybe didn't get the result that they wanted, can easily turn it around.
Agreed. And I think it's a nice little change. You know, you're saying with that earlier on, and you know, you need to see more balance. You need to see in this competition a few of the lower teams try to rise up to the occasion, because that's always the big knock at the end of the day. You know, the seeded system, not only by how a team performs individually in the past couple of years, but how, you know, powerful the nation as a whole is in these sort of competitions, where you have some teams and no knock on them to say that they don't deserve to be seeded, but we always wonder, well, how is, you know, Chelsea still never seeded? How are some of these teams, you know, getting these, not to say comfortable ties, but they're avoiding some of the big players? Yeah, it's good to see. I think, what, in how many, the 16 ties, maybe a dozen of them still in the balance. So it's good. It's going to keep things more intriguing as we go on throughout the competition.
Yeah, some of those clubs obviously won away from home by narrow margins, and when they go to their home game, I'm pretty confident some of them will win comfortably. But there are still some ties that are alive, and I think that's the important thing. Sometimes in the UEFA Women's Champions League, we see very heavy scores very early on. I mean, we can almost rule out Medic Konin and Lyon. Well, not almost. We can rule out Medic Konin and Lyon, Valdenes and Barcelona. You know, there are ties that are dead and buried that the bigger team is going to go through. But we kind of expect that when we see the teams that we see the players that those teams have. You know, you very rarely see upsets happen against the likes of Lyon. So it's no surprise to see that they won comfortably. But the second legs happen this week. We will cover them off next week. JJ and I, as I said, will be on the same time zone, so we'll be able to record a podcast a lot easier than what we're normally able to because of the time difference. But we'll move on, mate, because this is going to be a slightly shorter podcast. WSL fixtures over the weekend and over the last couple of weeks have thrown up, I wouldn't say surprises, but some results that are maybe disappointing for clubs concerned. And I hate to come back to it, but I have to point the finger at Arsenal for the moment, because last Saturday, or the Saturday before last, they were comfortably beaten by Manchester City 5-2, having clawed their way back to 2-2 and then essentially imploding. And Man City really overrunning them, especially in midfield. And then this past weekend, I was at their game against Bristol City. Now, Bristol City had shipped 6 goals away at Chelsea on the opening weekend of the FAWSL. Arsenal, as many chances as they had, as much possession as they had against Bristol, only able to achieve a 1-1 draw, and they actually fell behind as well. They look disjointed to me, mate. They have so much talent in that team, like an unbelievable amount of talent. The fact they were able to bring on the likes of Lisa Evans and Beth Mead off the bench, you know, they had players that didn't even get on the field, the likes of Louise Quinn, who's obviously an Ireland international. I'm trying to figure out what the problem is at Arsenal, because when they're good, they are ridiculously good. But when they are struggling to break down opposition or they are disjointed, they can look very average.
Well, I think the big one comes down to me, Kieran. You have too many high-quality players. And not to say that they're not buying into the system, but you always had that question as a manager, how do you keep everybody happy with a lot of playing time? And I think because you have a lot of players that could play a fair amount of positions, it might take longer than people expect for them to really sort out their system. I think, you know, over the years, and we're not just saying over the past couple of months, over the past couple of years, you and I have said that, you know, now has to be the time for Pedro Losa to figure it out. Now has to be the time for the team to start performing and get results, because let's face it, if they don't get Champions League, there is going to be some serious issues, because a lot of these players came in expecting, okay, so this year they're not going to be playing in Europe. Our job is to get to Europe for next campaign. If they don't get there, I could see a mass exodus on the horizon. And, you know, that puts a lot of strain onto the head coach. And, you know, I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because you see Arsenal in person almost, well, a lot more than I do, because I'm only privy to anything that's on a stream or on a highlights package. Does it look like Pedro Losa has really this team fighting for each other and fighting for the club? Or is it one of those moments that, you know, they might need a little bit of a change at the person at the top?
I don't think fighting for each other is an issue. I think if you look at the way the team is playing, it's not through a lack of effort or a lack of trying. I was very open. I find it very difficult sometimes, and some of the issues, and you'll know this covering the women's game, is that you can sometimes be a little bit too close to it to offer an honest opinion. And there have been subjects in the past that I've found difficult to talk about, because you're talking about people that you get on with, and Pedro Losa is one of those. You know, I've interviewed and spoken to Pedro post-match I don't know how many times over the last couple of years, and it's difficult to criticise someone who gives you their time and is always very polite and very pleasant. But I do think he's on borrowed time. I do think that he has a team that doesn't have the chemistry of a Chelsea or a Manchester City. Now, you're talking about a team that has a lot of big players and a lot of big personalities. So do Chelsea. But I look at the way that Emma Hayes has got Chelsea set up, and we'll talk about them in a minute, and it's a complete contrast. You know, every player in that Chelsea team, especially in that Bayern game, knew their role, knew their responsibility. I look at the Arsenal team, and I'm not sure that they do. And I think it's chopping and changing of personnel. It's chopping and changing of positions. Heather O'Reilly started left wing in the first half. Then she went out to the right wing second half, had to come off with a dead leg. You know, it's changing of centre-backs. Josie Henning played centre-back in the two games that I've seen over the last week. Gemma Rose came in at the weekend, having had a long spell out. And it was good to see Gemma Rose back, because Gemma Rose is a talented defender and has had some real issues with injury since joining Arsenal. So it was good to see her back. But I don't know what it is, mate, because I look at that team from back to front. I don't see where the weakness is. So I'm struggling to figure out why. And no disrespect to Bristol, because I tell you what, they put in a shift yesterday. And they deserve a lot of credit. It's all very well me saying how Arsenal looked disjointed and Arsenal weren't at their best, but Bristol were brilliant. They were disciplined, they were organised, they were determined, and they were deserving of their point.
But, and also, by the way, that goal that Hemp scored was an absolute cracker of a finish as well.
Unbelievable.
Mean, you're talking about the internationals that Arsenal have. I mean, I look at that Bristol City lineup. You give it 3 years, I think, you're going to have a fair amount of those players playing high-quality international matches. I mean, Lauren Hemp is, what, 17? Carla Humphrey, maybe 20? I don't know off the top of my head. Julie Biesmans, I know, is a player that you got a very good recommendation on how good she can be. Lauren Dyke's also another. I mean, these are a lot of young players that, in time, given maturity, they're going to be top-class professionals. And you're talking about the effort that they give. I'm not surprised to hear that they get a result away.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. The problem for a team like Bristol, sadly, is that it's difficult to keep hold of those players. We've seen it with Claire Emsley. Claire Emsley was superb for Bristol and then got a big move to Manchester City. And unfortunately, players, like you've mentioned, they are likely at some point to move on. Although one of the things that we haven't discussed, and we'll discuss it in a minute, is obviously the FA's announcement over the restructuring of the FAWSL, which is a conversation that could fill up a whole podcast quite easily, but we'll try and cover it off briefly. But I don't want to dwell too much on Arsenal. They've got work to do, no doubt about that. They've got a couple of Continental Cup games, which will be a good distraction from the league. But I think their next league game is away at Everton. And Everton gave a very good game to Manchester City over the weekend, and that one will not be easy. And we should go to Everton because they pushed Manchester City all the way in their home game and lost 3-2. But unfortunately, JJ, the game was overshadowed by a really, really nasty injury to German international Paulina Bremer. And it's been confirmed by the club that she suffered a fracture of her leg, and it looks like she's going to be out for a little while. It wasn't pretty, was it?
No, it wasn't. I'll be honest, I'm one of those people that get a little bit squeamish when things like happen, so I kind of quickly turned away. But yeah, this is one of those players that was brought in, not to say a like for like change, but I think what it is, almost at the exact same day that Lucy Bronze was announced that she was moving to Lyon. So you bring in a player like Paulina Bremer, and now you're going to be without her for not to speculate in how long, but it's definitely going to be at least the rest of the fall season. I don't know how long into the spring season. This is going to hurt the team, not only for their depth in league, not only the depth in Continental Cup, but also their depth in Champions League, because City was probably expecting her to play at least 80% of those matches.
Yeah, without question. And obviously the FA Cup as well. They've got four competitions. They've got four competitions this year, and they need all the depth that they can get. And unfortunately, losing Paulina, a friend of mine works at Everton, and he said that it really didn't look very good, and I heard that Nikita Paris was also physically sick on the side of the pitch when she saw the injury. So when you're hearing things like that, you know it's not good, and I think you're right. I think a fractured leg, I don't think we'll see her again this season. Maybe at the back end of the season we might see her. I'm no medical expert, so I don't like to speculate, but you hear about something like that, it's certainly not going to be a quick fix. So really do wish Paulina Bremer all the best, because talented player, still very young. So she'll come back from this, and she'll come back stronger, no doubt. But real shame, real shame. But good win for Man City off the back of the win over Arsenal as well. They look different this year, JJ. You know, last year, winning games 1-0, 2-0, really, really solid at the back. Already conceded a few goals this season, but they are scoring for fun as well.
Yeah, agreed. You know, it's a good time right now. And that, I think that's the beauty of it, right, where you have that spring season to start trialing some things, and now you make it known here in this regular season, or if you will, but the new fall to spring season. And yeah, good changes, but changes that had to be made, and they're paying off.
Yeah, without question. And Chelsea, already spoken about them a couple of times already in relation to the win over Bayern Munich. They've started like a house on fire. Three wins, no goals conceded, and they as well are scoring for fun. They stuck six past Bristol, six past Sunderland, and then they got a narrow 1-0 win over Liverpool through a goal from Maren Mjelde. And I mentioned her a little bit earlier, mate. We talk about a lot of the internationals that are making their way over to the WSL. We talked a lot about Heather O'Reilly and Crystal Dunn, because obviously we have a mutual interest in the NWSL and US soccer. We've talked a lot about some of the other internationals that have come as well, but Maren Mjelde, I think, could potentially be one of the best signings that Chelsea have made, and actually one of the best signings that we've seen come to the WSL, because she has everything. She is defensively sound, she can play centre-back, she can play holding midfield, but she's also a threat going forward as well. And that was something that Emma Hayes touched on when I spoke to her at the weekend. You know, she said Maren's qualities weren't just, they didn't bring in Maren just for her qualities defensively. They brought her in because she is and can be a threat going forward as well. And just a really real, just a real pleasure to watch. You know, just glides across the field, can pass, can shoot, can tackle. I think she could be one of the best signings that we see in the WSL this year.
Well, that's a definite hot take right there, but I appreciate that hot take. I mean, look, I watched the highlights of that match against Liverpool, and let's face it, if it wasn't for Siobhan Chamberlain pulling off a couple of stops, not only on her, but on the rest of the Chelsea team, that score would have been a lot more lopsided and unfavorable to Liverpool than it was. I mean, Mielda's goal was class. The team... You talked about it with the Arsenal team and, you know, the similarities and rosters that have internationally loaded players and how you can go 6-7 players deep into the bench and you can still bring talent that can keep that level at a very high pace. Chelsea, they're just making it work right now. I mean, you look at the players that came in making impacts. You have Annie Aluko, who I think she was, you know, very good in the very short amount of time that she was on the field in that match. She was deprived of, I think, what could have been a really good goal if Chamberlain didn't come up to the rescue. That Drew Spence's quality. Fran Kirby, obviously, we know how good she can be on her day. And, yeah, you know, I don't see a team right now beating Chelsea on their run. And it starts with Mielda. You're talking about not only a player that can score. She can score both in the run of play and also hit a very killer set piece as well. I think... she was the one that scored, went bar down in the World Cup back in 15, right outside the area. Forgetting which game it was, but she put one in at that, and I knew, wow, you know, this is a player that can hit a very good set piece, can score from the run of play, and she scored a couple of lovely goals so far.
Yeah, they blessed Chelsea, without question. The bench they had against Bayern was impressive. A number of those players that started on the bench then came into the team. Against Liverpool, I've already waxed lyrical about how Maria Torres-Dottir played against Bayern Munich and Magdalena Eriksson as well. I was impressed with her. Her deliveries from set pieces, mate, is an asset as well, as well as her defensive qualities. I really like Chelsea. I've said it before, I think they're the team to beat this season. I mean, there's obviously other fixtures that have taken place as well. Sunderland got a good win over Reading, who in turn then drew with Birmingham. Birmingham have started okay. They got a win over Everton last week. Everton are still trying to find their feet, having made the step up from WSL2. The one team that we haven't mentioned, and I've left them last deliberately, is Yeovil Town Ladies. We're seeing them struggle a little bit with the level. We saw them struggle in the spring series as well. Yeovil Town Ladies have started a crowdfunding page to try and raise £350,000 to help them apply for a license for the newly, I wouldn't say created, but the newly structured FAWSL1 from next season. Now, for anyone that missed it, it's unlikely that you have, but a very brief overview. The FA have announced that the FA Women's Super League will be restructured from 2018-2019 and will have up to 14 teams, and the league will be fully professional. The clubs will have to meet a certain number of criteria to be able to apply for an FAWSL licence, which will include things like giving players a minimum of 16 hours contact time on the field, i.e. training time, which will increase to 20 hours from 2019-2020. They will have to have things like a full-time general manager. This is a big move by the FA, JJ. It will bring into play a number of clubs who have never played in the FAWSL1 and in some cases haven't played in the top division of English football, the likes of Tottenham Hotspur Ladies, Brighton and Hove Albion. Clubs even further down the pyramid, Southampton, who are well down the pyramid, have registered an interest in the past of being a WSL club. But what it does do for a club like Yeovil, whose men's team are, League One, League Two in the men's pyramid, they don't have the finances or the money to be able to fulfil the criteria that the FA have set out, and therefore they are having to start a crowdfunding page to try and raise the money needed. Now, people will say, this is great, we need a fully professional league, it helps move the teams on, it helps the national team because they will have a league full of professional players to pick from. But on the flip side, you have a club like Yeovil who have earned the right to be in the top division of English football, and within, a year, they are then being told you potentially could drop out because you can't meet the requirements of the criteria. it doesn't sit well with some people. Some people aren't too bothered. I'd be interested in your take based on the information that I've just provided you.
Well, I've kept a close eye on all this, and you know, there I see both the positives and the negatives. I'll start with the positives first, and you know, I can understand why the FA want to see, you know, 14 sides employ the how many available roster spots and say, look, this is now going to be, if you know, that full-time position. You don't have to worry about doing anything else outside of playing football. You get to train full-time, play full-time, get paid the proper amounts as well. And, you know, that's beneficial. And I think also not only does it give opportunities to players, but also, you know, they as in the FA saw the heads in the deer lights when you have the Sunderland issues from a year and a half ago where they were full-time but then dropped down because of funding. You have Notts County just completely fold up operations. They don't want to have that happen again, and it creates a little bit of a black mark. So I can see the positives. Now to the negatives. We in America don't have pro rel. That's promotion relegation. We as Americans don't understand, you know, the glory day of when you find out that you've earned yourself the right to compete with the best because you were the best in the division that you were in, which is obviously the lower ones from the year prior, or the absolute heartache that you get when you find out you're in a certain division, but you're not good enough that year, so you have to drop down and try to earn your way back up. But I can understand and sympathize for the fact that Yeovil Town, you know, they worked hard. Was it, well, not last year because last spring, but in the last full season to earn their way to this position, and now you're getting pretty much slapped in the face to say, well, that's great, you get to enjoy it for 1 year, but because you don't have the finances, you don't have the proper people backing you, you don't have, you know, not to say, I don't know what their situation is, but for teams like that that don't have a full-time training staff, full-time facilities usage, et cetera, et cetera. Well, guess what? You're going to go play in another division now, and maybe in a few years we might start paying attention to you again. That sucks. Not to use layman terms, but that really does suck.
Yeah, that's the difficulty, isn't it? You've got a club there that's punching above its weight, if we're being honest, in terms of the size of the club. They've earned the right to be in that division, and now it looks like, unless they can raise this money, they are not going to be going into the WSL next year. I think what's... my take on it is we do need a professional league. We do need to be able to have a league where players are paid as professionals and given the opportunity to train as professionals as well. No one has any arguments with that. The timing is the one that I'm a little bit confused by, mate. You know, it came two games into the season, a game into the season that this was announced. You've then got, I saw a number of FAWSL2 players that I follow on social media kind of, you know, tweeting out, so what's the point of this season? Because there's going to be no promotion. You know, the way that the WSL is going to work next year is that the teams that play in the top division will have applied for their position. They won't have necessarily earned their position through performances. This is a difficult one, and I'm surprised that this wasn't an announcement now, maybe for like a couple of years' time, so that teams have the opportunity to get their houses in order and to see whether they genuinely have a chance of applying for a license. This was a game, two games into the new season, and all of a sudden it's next year, this is all going to happen. You have until the middle of November to put your application in. Now, I don't know how long these conversations have been going on for, but that just doesn't seem very fair on some of the smaller clubs like a Yeovil. You know, look at a team like Millwall Lionesses, who have started really well in WSL2. They have some really good players in that side. Some of them I know on a personal level. You know, they could finish top of WSL2, and if Millwall don't meet the criteria for going into the top division, they're going to be staying where they are, despite the fact that they will have finished top of the league. And that's just an example. So it is difficult. I completely support the notion of a fully professional league. It's just the timing that I have an issue with. And I think that's where my concern is.
And I think the big one for me is, they've talked a lot about what this first division is going to look like. So what about everybody else? You know, there aren't exactly just 14 clubs out there. We have the two tables of 10 going on at the moment. So that means between currently WSL 1 and 2, you're going to have six teams between those sides, and maybe could be more because, like you said, Southampton is putting in supposedly putting in a bid. Another team,
West Ham. West Ham, another one.
Well, I mean, like, how? So these teams are pretty much going to be stranded. Not to say completely not knowing what their season is going to look like next year, but what is their season going to look like next year? I know that there's some framework, but they haven't exactly gone about and said, okay, so then Division 2 is going to look like this. Division 3 is going to look like this. Is there a way that if you don't have X amount of dollars right now, but if you do, say, in 2 years' time, could you then apply to be in Division 1? Because it sounds like Pro Rel is pretty much off the table now. It's just going to be single tables. They might meet in, you know, the FA Cup if there's some sort of like a Continental Cup as there is right now, maybe a competition similar to that. But otherwise, that's it. You know, so, yeah, I understand what the players in the lower divisions are asking. Well, what's the point, really, of us competing outside of for pride and for one trophy?
Yeah, if we're honest, mate, it almost mirrors what you guys have in the US. No promotion, no relegation, and a setup that will probably mirror what we've seen in the past with the former W League, and what do you have now? The US Soccer League or something?
So, yeah, it's the UWS. United Women's Soccer, and there's also just a summer part-time league called the WPSL, which can range pretty much from high school freshmen to, you know, players in their mid-30s who just want to play. So, yeah, I mean, it's brutal right now.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. I mean, it would take, obviously, for the women's game here in the U.S. a lot longer for promotion relegation to even become a possibility. It's more right now the men's side of things where everybody's fighting for it, but I don't see that ever happening anytime soon. So yeah, it's not fun. And for the players, I know personally from talking with a bunch who've played at all different levels, yeah, it's great when you're at the top, but when you're in the second division, well, okay, you're playing for a trophy and some pride that will stick with you for a couple of weeks, and then what's next? You have to wait until next season, and you're going to be seeing the same teams over again, as opposed to challenging yourself like it would anywhere else in the world, and, you know, getting the opportunity, as you say, punch above your weight for some teams, and for some others, they prove that they can stay with those top sides.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that one works out. We talked a lot about Yeovil. Sunderland will be another team that will probably fall out of that division, going to a part-time model, not offering a professional environment for the team, or certainly for a lot of the team. I think there are a few players that are still training as professionals there, but I don't know how the setup quite works at the moment. But we'll have to see how that one unfolds. I'm sure we're going to learn more in the coming months in the lead up to the next season. And as I said, the application deadline is the middle of November, so teams haven't got an awful lot of time to submit those requests. But we mentioned NWSL. I said this was going to be a shorter podcast, JJ. I'm having a look. I've got 45 minutes done already. Jesus. Okay. NWSL playoffs took place this past weekend, and we now know who our finalists are going to be in Orlando. It is going to be the Portland Thorns, who overcame the Orlando Pride 4-1, and it is going to be the North Carolina Courage, who overcame the Chicago Red Stars in the last minute, thanks to a Denise O'Sullivan winner. Let's start with that one, because yes, it was the Western New York Flash that won the title last year, but it is with the players that are currently with the North Carolina Courage. So my understanding, I saw a tweet from Jeff Kasouf that the records will be retained by the Western New York Flash. So in theory, this is the North Carolina Courage's first title that they are going for. They've played the role of the underdog all the way through the season. They are through to a second final or a first final, however you want to look at it. I think they deserved it, mate. I watched the game last night, and Chicago were well below par. Rory Dames said in his post-match interview that he had a team that was very tired, and they looked like a very tired side.
They did. I think the first half of the two, the Red Stars, actually, they didn't look too bad. They created a number of chances and half chances at that, but when it came down to the business end of the match, which was the second half, North Carolina started pouring it on. They kept putting pressure on the back line and Alyssa Nair and goal. And yeah, sure, that's kind of a hard one to give up there. In the end, Denise O'Sullivan's strike took a bit of a rough deflection off Julie Ertz, and You know, I don't think any keeper comes up with that save, and that's hard done for Nehru. I thought he's had another tremendous season at the club level and is really, in my mind, worthy of that number one shirt for the U.S. going forward for the next cycle. But, yeah, I mean, I put it in my piece about the Thorns. We'll obviously get to Portland in due time, but the Courage, sure, they only finish 2 points up or whatever in the table to win the regular season title in the Shield. Yeah, but they're class. They were the best team in the regular season, bar none, most consistent week in, week out. And you expected this. Maybe you expected a little more goal scoring, but you know what? You said the players that were with the Flash last year found a way to win both of those games to take home the title. They found a way to do it on Sunday. And by the way, pretty adverse conditions. Actually, right now, if I look outside my window up in the Northeast, we're getting the remnants of a tropical storm that actually pretty much passed right through or right around where North Carolina is at the moment. So very humid, waterlogged conditions that the players played in, but they gave a good account of themselves, and they're going to the final.
I hate to refer back to them, but we were talking about Arsenal earlier and my belief that some of those players don't know what the role and responsibility that they have. That is a complete contrast to the North Carolina Courage. I look at that team that Paul Riley is putting out week in, week out. Every single player in that team knows what their role is. I don't see any weakness there. They might not have what you would describe as the superstars of a Portland, and we'll talk about them in a minute. But I look at, in midfield especially, McCall Zaboni has been absolutely phenomenal this season. Sam Mewis will rightly, I think, won the club's MVP. You look at the forward line that Paul Riley has rotated with Lynn Williams and Ashley Hatch and Jess McDonald and others as well. It doesn't matter who he plays in that lineup. Every single player seems to know what their role is.
And I talked about earlier about players buying into a system and accepting, you know, what their job is. And you mentioned it as well. That's exactly what the Courage do. I mean, you know, we didn't even mention the fact that Dabinia is not going to be available for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's
the postseason due to an injury. And they didn't miss a beat with her not in the lineup. I mean, sure, does she bring some dynamic, you know, motions and ability that maybe individually another player who came into her role would not bring? Okay, fine. But they still were clicking on cylinders. They draw set pieces. They put you under pressure. And eventually, you know, I kind of refer to it, especially when you're in baseball and you keep swinging, eventually if you keep chopping down that tree, it's going to fall. So that's kind of my analogy with the Courage. They keep, you know, having wax at it, and eventually the tree falls, ball goes in, and yeah, I find it very hard, and I know Portland's got a very good team, and I think that they have the talent to bring home the title, but it's going to be tough to count against the Courage right now.
Yeah. What do you make of Paul Riley's insistence that his club plays the role of the underdog? Because I know that's coming under a little bit of scrutiny. I saw a tweet by Merritt Paulson saying, I look forward to facing the Courage next week, and a week of Paul Riley claiming that his side is the underdog. Now, I know that that's come under a little bit of criticism and scrutiny, being that they won the title as the Western New York Flash last year. They obviously won the NWSL Shield this year. But my view is that if you have built a team that's successful on the mentality that you are the underdog, why would you change that based on a Shield and a title win? I don't care who you are. If Paul Riley has got a team that is buying into that role of the underdog and they are going out every single game with a chip on their shoulder to try and prove people wrong, then for me, you keep that mentality going. Doesn't matter how successful you are, you keep that going. And if you're winning matches and you're winning titles, I don't care if you're playing the role of the underdog, you're winning.
I absolutely agree. And this, you know, maybe some of those quotes were a little bit of banter and trying to stir the pot. And quite frankly, I think the sport needs a little more of that. To try to draw that social media attention. I know some may have been ruffled, and actually some were ruffled by those comments of Paul Riley saying that the underdogs, but yeah, you're right. If you have to buy into a pit bull mentality, and I think what they call the yard dogs or something along those lines, that they're kind of have that pack mentality, that they're going to fight together as a unit and they succeed as one or they fail as one. It doesn't matter on the day as long as they're fighting for each other. Whatever. So be it. Good for them. That's what they have to do. Then go do it. And quite frankly, you know, for the Thorns, you know, they have their own model. North Carolina has their own model. It doesn't matter what other people think, as long as you said, everybody who's within whichever group they bought in, then so be it. And you carry on. That's why this match on Saturday evening is going to be very intriguing, because it is a little bit of contrasting styles of play, but at the same time, two teams that can play very enlightening football.
Yeah, quick one before we move on to the second semi-final. Word on Chicago Red Stars, third semi-final playoff defeat in three seasons. As I say, for me, weren't at their best yesterday. Looked a little bit off the pace. Where do they go from here?
You know, they're consistent, you know, season in, season out. And if you ask somebody, all right, would you be satisfied with maybe one really good season, then two subpar seasons, or three very good seasons with keys and pieces to build on, but they don't win any trophies? Yeah, I'll take the latter, and I think that's where Chicago is right now. It's unfortunate they have been, you know, succumbed to this one-game playoff. You win or you go home, and they just haven't found that right key. And boy, yeah, I mean, that's rough. You know, when you, I think last year is probably the rougher of the two, when you feel like you outplay Washington at times, but then you give up a goal late, press hits the bar. And I mean, remember in this match, you know, on Sunday, where they had a ball cleared off the line in stoppage time, and they thought that they probably had that go over as well. And yeah, it's rough, but I think you stay the course. I know Rory Dames has a plan. He's always a guy that, you know, is not only looking for what's here in the present, but what's coming up 3-5 years down the road. He's a very good, you know, master of the draft as well, as he knows exactly who he's got to recruit. So the Red Stars are not of any concern at the moment. I know that was a tough one to take, but you just keep plugging away, and we're going to see the Chicago Red Stars in an NWSL championship game very soon.
Yeah, I agree with that. We know that he's going to use the draft very well in Philadelphia in January as well, so no doubt they will be pushing again next season. Quick shout out to Denise O'Sullivan. I mean, what a story, getting waived by a Houston Dash team who were, if we're being honest, not very good this year, and not deemed good enough for that side, and she scores the winner in the semi-final to take her team through to the championship final. And she's been very, very good in that North Carolina side, I will say that. I wasn't really sure how she'd fit in, because that team was already so strong, but she's gone in there, she's put in performances, and to get the winner, and so late on as well, fair play to her, because she's gone in there and really stamped her mark on the team. Second semi-final, or what was the first semi-final, JJ, Portland Thorns 4, Orlando Pride 1. Now, the scoreline is probably a little bit flattering on Portland, because Orlando actually played quite well. They had chances, but that Portland team is formidable, and when they get going, they are difficult to stop.
They are. I kind of want to talk about Orlando first, because I think, you know, there's more to just the story than they lost on the day. I mean, this is what, three consecutive seasons now where we've had a quote-unquote neutral site or a predetermined site selected for the championship game, yet two of those 3 years the team comes so close to be playing in front of their home crowd for that championship, yet they come up short. That's one. But the other big one for me, Kieran, is I think you and I discussed right at the beginning of the season, right after Marta signed, that this year, not to say it was all or nothing, but it's pretty close to being all or nothing for Orlando trying to get the trophy this year, knowing that, you know, 2 years ago, the amount of changes that came in through that team during the Olympics, we're going to have World Cup qualifying next year for CONCACAF. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of holes to fill, and, you know, this might have been not the last chance, but the last chance for a few years for Orlando to get it done. I'm curious to hear what you have to say on it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but we've seen it before, haven't we? Portland are another team who are always decimated when qualification and international windows occur, because they are littered with quality and stars from all over the world, that we've seen them win major competitions and qualifying has happened, that they have had to resort to playing amateur players, haven't they? They've had to sign players onto short-term contracts because they can't even field an 11 and a bench. So, yeah, you could be right. You could be right. But I think that Tom Samani's obviously committed himself. He signed a new contract. I'm sure that he will be planning ahead and looking to try and fill those gaps that you talk of. And, yeah, I thought the Pride were good at the weekend. I don't think that a 4-1 scoreline was reflective of the game. I do think Portland were deserving of their win. Obviously, went ahead early for Amandine Henry, obviously playing her last game in Portland before she goes back to Lyon. And then that kind of set the tone, didn't it? Emily Sonnet, who, I will say this, Emily Menges is getting a lot of credit for the season that she's had, and rightly so. And let's be frank, she should have been probably in the lineup for Defender of the Year. She should have been in the lineup probably for MVP for the season. But give a shout out to Emily Sonnet, you know, overlooked for the US Women's National Team over the last, 6 to 9 months. And she has stepped up, and she is proving that Jill Ellis has some decisions to make, because I think that those two have worked tremendously well together.
Yeah, I think that's the continuity in it. When you're playing week in, week out with each other, those players not getting, well, at least Sonnet not getting called in to the national team, and you get to really build on that chemistry, it's a beautiful thing to watch. And Emily Sonnet just has this mentality that it doesn't matter what's in front of her, she is going to get to any set pieces, and she is going to win headers and get goals or provide an opportunity for someone else to clean up the scraps. And boy, if there's a player that kind of, if you litter me with a bunch of players and say, go ahead and pick one to be a center back right now, yeah, Menges is there. But I think right now you take the current form of Sonnet and her goal scoring abilities in addition to her defending, yeah, I'm going to take her 9 times out of 10, because this is a player that thrives on the big atmosphere. And you saw it in her face and her emotions after she scored that goal. I think there are a couple of funny social media posts with her. I think, what was it, when you're at Benihana's and the chef is about to toss you to shrimp and she has the mouth wide open screaming in delight after she scores. I thought that was hysterical. But I mean, she's a player that loves these big matches. And I think, you know, we talk with North Carolina how deadly they can be on corner kicks and set pieces. You don't want to leave Sonnet alone in the box because she's going to make you pay.
Yeah, especially when you've got players like Tobin Heath putting balls into the box. Megan Klingenberg, I have to say, is another one who has been a little bit overlooked maybe in the last few US Women's National Team camps. I thought she was excellent on Saturday, and when I've seen her this season, I think she's been excellent, and I think she's giving Jill Ellis something to think about as well. But Portland were just relentless in that first half. You know, they really went at it. It was a brilliant game to watch. It was end-to-end, but Portland were lethal. As I said, Amandine Henry and Emily Sonnet both scoring. Shout out to Hayley Rasso, mate. You know, talk about a player who came into Portland maybe seen as a bit of a bit part player, maybe a squad player, but she is making herself very difficult to drop because she scored a goal, but her all-round play at the moment is something that's really, really impressed me.
Well, she works well with Sinclair up top. These are two very different strikers, but the ones that you want. Because Sinclair does have that target striker ability. We know that she's very good running at goal, but she can hold up the play. Rasso can kind of slide in right underneath, or if you work her out wide, she combines well. And another pacey player, someone that can slip in through the back line when you need to send her forward. And another player that also, because remember, she followed pretty much Mark Parsons over from Washington to Portland. She's really elevated her career by that move here stateside full-time and then now going to Portland, surrounding herself with really some of the best players in the world week in, week out. And yeah, you know, I could see, I know there's been some camps that she's not been selected for Australia, but I think, you know, with her consistent performances, I really hope that in the future it's going to be more frequent that we see her name in the Matilda side as opposed to omitted.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that. Well, look, we could talk about this game for ages, but I'm looking at the clock again and we have run over an hour, and this was meant to be a shorter podcast. So very quick one, looking ahead to the final. North Carolina Courage, Portland Thorns. I'm not going to ask you to make a prediction, JJ, but I guess I'd like to know what you make of the lineup, how you think this one might pan out.
Yeah, I said earlier, contrasting styles. You have North Carolina, who can make games, not to say dirty, but you know, you can make the games very tough to break you down. We saw that especially with Chicago in that first half, and then they take over in the second. And Portland, when they're a team that can hit you on cylinders, they are not going to stop. So that one I'm going to look at to see what the midfields are going to be like for each of those two teams. The last one, at least tactically, it had four for Portland, and then it can flex for North Carolina, three or four. So, yeah, midfield is going to be a big one for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, we'll see how it unfolds. Kickoff in Orlando on Saturday is at 4:30 Eastern time. I'll be at the game, so I will try and get some audio, and we have a media day beforehand, so maybe try and do something again before the game occurs. But should be an interesting one. Top two teams from the division. It's going to be hopefully entertaining and a great setting. The Orlando City Stadium looks absolutely phenomenal, so I look forward to visiting that one. JJ, I think we'll wrap it up there, mate. We'll speak to you next week on the same time zone, and we can have a chat about this NWSL Championship game and Continental Cup in the WSL and anything else that's going on.
Sounds like a plan to me, bud.
Good stuff. Well, as always, we appreciate you listeners tuning in. We always, always, always appreciate you giving us your time. If you want to contact us, you can. We're on wosozone@gmail.com. We are on Twitter, on @wosozone. You can listen to us at womenssoccerzone.com, where we will also have written content. And if you wish to listen to us through a device, you can also do so on iTunes. So we will catch up with you soon. Until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.